Gimelam and Aleph. It's kind of in the middle of a sugya, but we'll explain what's going on here in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Uma ilu eved kohen shabarach ve'ishas kohen shemarda al baila halo ochlim b'sruma v'ze'in ochel." The Gemara previously was discussing this question about whether emancipating your eved kenaini is that considered to be something which is beneficial or detrimental to the eved. So the basis for that machlokas in the Gemara back on yesterday's daf was the question of whether the eved is going to be allowed to continue eating truma, right? Because as long as the eved belongs to a kohen, let's say if the kohen is the master, so the eved's entitled to truma. Obviously, once he's released, once he's freed, he can no longer eat truma. So the Gemara now tries to draw the following comparison, the following contrast. It says that let's say you have an eved that belongs to a kohen, and the eved runs away. Or let's say, for example, you have a woman who's a Bas Yisrael that marries a kohen, but the woman is rebelling against her husband. She's not following the proper protocols of marriage. Maybe she's refusing to have relations, or she's not engaging in the normal household duties that are expected of her. So the halacha is that they're still allowed to eat truma. They're not disqualified from eating truma, even though they might have done something that they're not supposed to do. But this eved, who was emancipated by the adon, is not entitled to eat truma. So the Gemara says, doesn't that prove that freeing the eved is in fact to his detriment, because he's no longer allowed to eat truma? So the question is, shop your ka'amar luhu. That seems to be a good response of Reb Meir to the Rabbanan. Again, going back to the previous Gemara, how would the Rabbanan address that question? So the Gemara is very simple. Amar Rava, haynu dekama hadri lebe masnisen mipneshu kinyano, di boi shokil arba zuze mi Yisrael ufasile kol hecha di isay. The Mishnah said that the Eved Kenani was the monetary acquisition of the Adon, right? And Eved Kenani is considered the chattel. It's considered to be property of the Adon. Therefore, the Gemara explains that the Adon at any point can decide to sell his Eved Kenani to a Yisrael, right? If he sells his Eved Kenani to a Yisrael, so then he's also not allowed to eat Truma. So the Gemara says it's not really, in other words, it's not really a benefit or a detriment. It's that the master has full control over the decision of whether the Eved is going to be able to eat Truma, because he can easily sell him as an Eved to a non-Kohen. Okay, then the Gemara says to Rabbi Meir, Tenach Eved Kohen, Eved Yisrael, Ma'ikol Ameimar. Then the Gemara turns back to Rabbi Meir. Again, Rabbi Meir was the one who said that it's considered to be detrimental to free Eved Kenani because he's no longer able to eat Truma. So the obvious question is, okay, but that's only a relevant factor if the master happens to be a Kohen. The master is a Yisrael, so then anyway, the Eved Kenani can't eat Truma. So why then would it be detrimental to free an Eved Kenani who's owned by a Yisrael? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, no, it has nothing to do with Truma, but freeing an Eved is considered to be detrimental because now he's no longer able to marry a Shivcha Kenainis. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Adarabba, Harehu Matiro Bevas Chorin. Okay, so he can't marry a Shivcha Kenainis, but he can now marry a regular Jew. He's now considered to be a full-fledged Jew after you've emancipated him. So isn't that considered to be beneficial? So the Gemara says, no. Avda Behefkera Nechale, Zilale, Shchichale, Pritzale. An Eved prefers to live a life of licentiousness. He prefers to live a life of immorality. And a Shivcha Kenainis, typically speaking, is much more prust and lewd than a regular Jewish woman. And therefore, if you were to free the Eved Kenani, it actually will be to his detriment because he won't be able to lead that same lifestyle that he was previously leading. Okay, it says the Mishnah, Ha'omer tenu get zel yishti shtar shichru zela avdi vames lo yitnu liachar misa tenu mana leish ploni vames yitnu liachar misa. So the Mishnah draws the following contrast. If a husband or the Adon says, give this get to my wife or give this shtar shichru to my Eved, and then before the get is, or the Shtar Shechor are delivered, the husband or the owner dies, so the Mishnah says that you are not allowed to deliver the get of the Shtar Shechor. We spoke about this Gemara a little bit earlier. The Gemara earlier explained the reason for this is because in Shtar La'achar Misa, you can't deliver a Shtar after the husband or after the owner has died. However, if the person says, give 100 dinar to Reuven, and then Shimon dies before the money is delivered, the money can still be given even after Shimon's death. So the Gemara explains. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Mertam Yishmei Derav, V'husha Tzivurin Umunachin B'Keren Zavis. When the Mishnah said that you can deliver the money that was pledged even after Shimon has died, that's assuming that the money has been piled up and it's been designated and placed in a specific corner of the house. It's a specific denomination. He didn't just say, give Reuven $100, give Reuven 100 dinar. He pointed to a particular lump of money that was sitting in a certain corner, and he said, that money goes to Reuven, and then if Shimon dies, then that money goes to Reuven. But if it's just regular money, then it doesn't. So the Gemara clarifies. B'may askinon, ilema bivari, ki tzivurin may have, halo mashach. V'yela b'shchiv mera, may iria tzivurin ki ain't tzivurin nami, d'ha kaimalan d'divri shchiv mera ki chsuvim v'chim tzivurin damu. So the Gemara says, whichever way you want to explain the Mishnah, it's going to be problematic. If you think the Mishnah is talking about a regular, healthy, normal individual who pledges to give Reuven the money and then Shimon dies, so the Gemara says, why on earth should Reuven acquire the money? Whether the money is piled up, whether it's not piled up, there was no kinyan that was done here. There was no meshicha. In order to transfer ownership of something to another person, typically, there needs to be a kinyan involved. It's not enough for Shimon to say, I'm hereby declaring that I'm giving this money to Reuven, and then if Shimon dies and Reuven doesn't pick the money up, so the money doesn't belong, to Reuven at all. So the Gemara says, but on the other hand, if you're going to tell me that the case was that when Shimon pledged to give the money to Reuven, Shimon was a shchiv mera, he was on his deathbed, so the Gemara in Bava Basra makes an exception by a shchiv mera, that whenever a shchiv mera, whenever a guy in his deathbed makes a declaration, that declaration is binding even without a kinyan. The reason being, because we're afraid that if you tell Shimon that he can't give the money, that he has to wait for Reuven to come and do a kinyan, it's going to get him all distressed and might hasten his death. Let's say Reuven is halfway across the world. He's not here right now. So it's going to really upset Shimon if he can't transfer the money over to Reuven. So there was an exception made by the case of a shchiv mera. But the Gemara says, but if that's the case, if we're talking about a shchiv mera, so then why does the money have to be piled up and in a specific corner? It could be any denomination that the shchiv mera should be able to transfer over to Reuven even without a kinyan. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rav Zvid, la'olam bivari, uched Ravuna marav, da'amar Ravuna marav, manali biyarcha, tenehu lo lefloni b'mayma tshlashtan kana. So the first answer of the Gemara is that really the case of the Mishnah is talking about a normal, healthy individual. The guy is not on his deathbed. So the question, of course, is if he's not on his deathbed, so there was no kinyan done here. So how does the money transfer? Even if he says, I want it to be this sum, this particular denomination, sitting in that corner of the room, it shouldn't make a difference if no kinyan was performed. So the Gemara explains that actually there was a kind of a kinyan done here, which is known as the kinyan of Maimat Shlushin. Maimat Shlushin means the following. Let's say Reuven owes Shimon money, and Shimon owes Levi money. Or Shimon just wants to give that money to Levi. So assuming that all three of them are present together, so in other words, Shimon can turn to Reuven and say, instead of you giving me the money back that you owe me, I want you to transfer that money to Levi. So if all three of them are present, that's called a Mamat Shlushtan. That's called the presence of all three of them. So that's a kinyan called Mamat Shlushtan. So the case could be that Shimon turns to Reuven and says, that 100 dinar that you owe me, I want you to give it to Levi, whether it's a gift, whether it's a repayment of a loan to Levi, whatever the case is. So that is going to be a valid kinyan. That's one answer in the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, Papa Amar La Olam Bishchiv Mira Uch Idach Rav to Amar Rav Shchiv Mira Shamar Tenu Mana Lefloni Mina Chasai Mana Zeh Nosnin Mana Stam Ein Nosnin Chayshinon Shema Mana Cover Ka Amar the Hilchasa LeKavura Lo Chayshinon. Then the Gemara quotes another approach, which says that really the Mishnah is discussing a case of a Shchiv Mira. In other words, the guy was on his deathbed when he said to give the money over to Reuven. However, Rav makes the following distinction, which is that when Shimon says on his deathbed, I want Reuven to have my 100 dinar, it's going to depend on how he formulates that statement. If he says, mana zeh, if he says, I want to give this particular denomination, I want this specific amount of money to go over, so then there's no question. Then that money certainly belongs to Reuven. However, if he only said mana stam, if he didn't specify the denomination, he just said, I want him to get 100 dinar, but he didn't say which 100 dinar, where the 100 dinar is located or anything like that. So then we have to be concerned that maybe he buried 100 dinar in the backyard or something like that. In other words, there's no way for us to know definitively that he meant that particular 100 dinar. So therefore, the Gemara says that would be a reason to distinguish depending on how Shimon formulated his statement. However, the Gemara points out la halacha that we do not accept this concern. In other words, we're not worried about the fact that when Shimon says, I want to transfer the 100 dinar over to Reuven, even if he doesn't really specify, at the end of the day, we don't really believe that there's 100 dinar hidden in the backyard somewhere. If we see 100 dinar here, we can safely assume that that's actually what he meant to transfer over to Reuven. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rav Papa, my time alo amar ki Rav Zvid, Kasavar of Papa Kiyam Arav, Veloshna Bemilva, Veloshna Befikadon. So the Gemara first wants to know, why does Rav Papa, again, he was the one who said that the Mishnah was talking about a case of a shchiv mera, and he drew this distinction between whether Shimon specified that it was this particular set of money or whether we have to be worried that there's money buried in the backyard somewhere. The reason why he doesn't accept Rav Zvid's premise that the Mishnah is talking about a regular healthy individual is because Rav Papa believed that Rav's statement applies whether we're talking about a regular loan or whether we're talking about a pikadon, a deposit, something which is tangible. A loan, if you think about it, is more more abstract, because in other words, if Shimon lent Reuven, let's say $100, so Shimon is not obligated to return the exact coins, the exact bills that were given. He just has to pay the restitution of the amount of the loan. Whereas when it comes to a deposit to a pikadon, so let's say I give you my Rolex watch, to safeguard, I'm expecting that exact watch back. So the Gemara says that Rav's din applies across the board. One might have argued that Rav's halacha should not apply to this more abstract type of a loan where I don't have to give you the, you know, particular denomination back that you give. I have to give you the same sum of money, but not the actual coins. Whereas by a pikadon, maybe the halacha should be different. So that would be a reason why Rav Papa shied away from Rav Zvid's interpretation. On the other hand, the Gemara says Rav Zvid, my time alo amar Rav Papa lo mitokma masnisin b'shchimera. So the Gemara says that Rav Zvid was uncomfortable saying that the Mishnah was talking about a case of a person on his deathbed. Mimai mi dekatan he haomer tenu get zela ishti ushtar shichur zela adi v'meis lo yitnu la'achar misa taima demes hamichayim nosnin taima de amar tenu halo amar tenu ein nosnin. So the Gemara says like this, that the Mishnah told us that if a person says, give this get to my wife, give the shtar shichur to my eved, and then the person dies, that you're not allowed to give that get or shtar shichur after the person is dead. So the Gemara says the only reason why you can't give the get or the shtar shichur is because the person is dead, implying, of course, that if they were alive, you could still give the get or the shtar shichur. And moreover, the Gemara says that that the only reason why you can't give the get, or in other words, the reason why you could have theoretically given the get or the shtar shichur had the husband or the owner been alive is because he says the word tenu, right? He says tenu get zelish, give this get to my wife. So the implication being that had he not specified the word tenu to give this get to my wife, it would have sounded like that you would not be authorized to actually, you know, to actually administer the get or the shtar shichur. So the Gemara points out ushchimera afa gab de lo amar tenu nos. And the problem is that when it comes to the laws of a shchimera of a person on his deathbed, you are in fact authorized to deliver the get or the shtar shichur, even if the person on his deathbed never specified and said, "I want you to actually hand the get over." In other words, for example, as Gemara is going to explain right now, this non barishona hayomrim ayotze bekolar va'amar kisvu get leishti hare elu yichtevu v'yitnu chazru lomar af hamefarish v'hayotze b'shayara Rabbi Shimon Shazuri omar af hamesukan. So the Gemara references a mission that appears later on in the Masechta about the following. Let's say you have a person who is being taken out to be killed, to be executed, whether he's being executed by the malchus, by the government, or maybe he's actually chayiv misa, whatever the case is. So the Mishnah later on says that as he's being taken out to his death, he says kisvu get leishti, write a get for my wife. He doesn't want his wife to have, you know, let's say, for example, they have no children, and there's going to theoretically be a scenario of yibum. So he doesn't want to have, you know, have his wife deal with that issue. So he says, write a get for my wife, but he never says give her the get. He never specifies to actually deliver the get. So the Mishnah later on says that you can still deliver the get because that's implicit. Why didn't he say deliver? Because the guy is about to be killed, so he's probably not thinking straight, most likely. So the Mishnah later on says that you can that you're authorized to actually deliver the get, even though the husband who's being taken out to be killed never actually said that. Then the Mishnah later on expounds and says, not only was that halacha stated that we can assume, that we can imply that he really meant to say deliver the get in the case where he's being taken out to be executed, but even a guy who's just going to travel, the guy is going overseas, he's going on a business trip, he's going away for a few months, so even there, if the guy says, I want you to write a get for my wife in case something happens to him, in case he, you know, whatever, in case he dies overseas or whatever it is, so even though he doesn't say to actually deliver the get, we can also assume that that's what he meant. And then the Gemara adds one final opinion of Rav Shimon Shazuri, who says that this halacha even applies to a person who's deathly ill. So a guy is on his death, but again, let's say for example they're childless, there's, you know, his brother lives halfway across the world, or the brother's not from, or whatever the case is, you know, there's going to be some kind of complication when it comes to Yibum, and he wants his wife to avoid any potential issues of Yibum down the line. So Rav Shimon Shazuri says, even if the guy on his deathbed only says, write a get for my wife, and he doesn't say to actually deliver it, we can also assume that he actually meant to say deliver. So the Gemara says, it can't be therefore that our Mishnah was talking about a case of a Shchidmara of a guy on his deathbed, because if that were the case, you would be allowed to deliver the get even without the specific authorization to do so. As long as he said, write the get, we can infer from there that he also meant to say, deliver the get. So the Gemara pushes back on this. The Gemara says, Maskiflo Ravashi, Uman Nema London, Mastisa Rishim Shazurihi, Dilma Rabbanani. The Gemara says, hang on a second. The only opinion in the Gemara, in the Mishnah later on, Dav Samachay, and the Gemara in Ksubis, that says that a person who is on their deathbed, who just said write a get, but never said deliver the get, that we can assume that he meant to say deliver the get, that was only Rav Shimon Shazuri talking. In other words, the Rabbanan said this halacha by a guy who's being taken out to be executed, or a guy who goes out on a trip overseas. But they never made that declaration, they never made this statement by a regular guy who's on his deathbed. That was only Rav Shimon Shazuri talking. So the Gemara says, maybe we don't possibly like Rav Shimon Shazuri. Maybe our Mishnah was following the Rabbanan who disagreed. Say no, that when a person's on their deathbed, it's not enough for him to just say write the get. Maybe he actually needs to specifically authorize delivering the get as well. Okay, then the Gemara says, Gufa. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Manali biyarcha teneyu lo lefloni b'mayimat shlashtun kana. This is again the Gemara that we referenced on the bottom, the previous Amud, which is that again, you know, if you have a scenario where Reuven owes money to Shimon, and then Shimon either owes money to Levi, or he just wants to give the money to Levi, he can transfer that money to Levi as long as all three of them are there. He can turn to Reuven and say, Reuven, I'm authorizing you to give this money to Levi. That's called the kinyan of mayimat shlashtun. All three of them are present, and he's going to transfer the obligation that Reuven has to pay him. He's going to give that money over to Levi. Amar Rava, Mistabra Milse Dirab Bifika Dirava Bimilva Lo, Veha Elokim Amar Rava Filu Bimilva. So the Gemara initially thinks that Rav's statement only makes sense specifically in the case of a Pikadon by a deposit, as the Gemara noted earlier, because a deposit, again, it's the same item. It's the exact same item that you're returning. You gave him the Rolex watch to, you know, to safeguard, and now you're getting back that exact Rolex watch. Whereas when it comes to a regular loan, you're not necessarily getting back the specific coins that you gave. You're getting back a different set of coins that you handed over. However, the Gemara says that la halacha, we assume that Rav's statement applies even when it comes to a loan, not just by a pikadon. We assume that the kinyan of mayimat shlashtun, this idea that I can transfer the obligation, is not only true by a deposit, it's also true by a loan. And in fact, the Gemara says, it marnami amar shmuel mishmei delevi milva levi yarcha teneyu lo lefloni b'mayimat shlashtun kana. The Gemara says this explicitly, that if I have a loan, if Reuven owes me money, I can, if Reuven is there and Levi is there, I can transfer that obligation to Levi. The time of my So the question is, how exactly does this kinyan of Maimat Shlashtun work? So the answer basically is that when I lend Reuven money initially, at the initial time of the loan, what Reuven essentially is accepting is that he's going to pay me back, or anyone who's coming from my authority. So if I authorize Levi to collect the loan, I'm saying I'm transferring this loan to Levi. Levi is now the one who can collect, so Reuven is similarly obligated to, you know, to pay restitution to Levi. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Amar le Rav Ashi la Amemar Ela Me'ata Hikna la No Ladim De Lo Havu B'Shas Matan Mos Hachinami De Lo Kanu." So the Gemara says, "But hang on a second. Let's say the case was a little more complicated. Let's say you had a scenario where instead of Reuven, instead of Shimon trying to transfer the money to Levi, he's trying to transfer the money to a child who is not yet born. Let's say he says, "I want to transfer the money to my unborn nephew, my unborn cousin, my unborn whoever." So the Gemara says that presumably that should not work. Why? Because the child wasn't alive at the time that the loan was administered. So Levi at least was around when the loan was initially administered, so it makes sense that Reuven, that Shimon can transfer authorization and say to Levi, you're going to now be collecting the loan from Reuven. But what if you have a child who's not yet born? Even Remeir, this is a machlokes that appears many, many places throughout Shas, where Remeir happens to be of the opinion that Ada Machne Dover Shalom Balun. We happen to not pass like Remeir, but Remeir is of the opinion that I am able to transfer something which does not yet exist in the world. In other words, let's say the classic example that the Gemara in Maseches Bava Metzia gives is, let's say, for example, I have a date tree, but the dates have not yet actually sprouted on the tree. So I have the actual tree here, but the dates have not yet, the tree has not yet bore fruit. So according to Rabbi Meir, I'm able to actually transfer ownership of those dates to you, even though they don't actually exist yet. However, even Rabbi Meir, who says that I can transfer ownership of an item that does not yet exist, agrees that the person to whom you're transferring the not yet existing item, that person has to exist. That person has to be alive. If the person is not yet born, then even Rabbi Meir agrees that the transfer is going to be null and void. So the question is, how would this case work? If Shimon wants to transfer the loan, the obligation, to an unborn child, so it sounds like that should not work. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela Amar Rav Ashi, The benefit that Reuven gets from the fact that he used to be subject to an old loan, to an old creditor, and now he's being subjected to a new one, in other words, he's essentially getting an extension on his loan. So that benefit that Reuven now has received an extension on his loan, he's essentially saying to Shimon, I'm willing to play along with whatever you want. So if you want to transfer the money to Levi, I'm fine with that. If you want to transfer the money to a child that's not yet born, I'm also fine with that. So in other words, when the new loan comes about, he's essentially cutting himself off from Shimon. And he's saying, okay, I'm going to transfer the money, to the new party. Which means that even if the child was not born at the time that the initial loan was administered, it doesn't make a difference. Assuming that the child is born now, let's say the child was born from the time the initial loan was administered to the time that now Reuven has to pay up the debt. So the child is born now. So the fact that Shimon is essentially, the fact that Reuven is saying, I'm cutting myself off from the initial lender because I'm getting this extension on the loan. So that benefit allows him to transfer the money to the previously unborn child, the child who was not born at the time of the original loan, but is born now. He is thereby able to transfer money to that child.